Hey everyone, thank you for tuning in to the SFLC podcast. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Dependable Solutions, innovating the future of your small to medium-sized business since 2012. Learn how you can save 40 to 60% on your overall credit card processing bill by going to dependable-solutions.net. Again, that's dependable-solutions.net. Also, teststrips.com. That's teststrips with a Z.com. Managing diabetes is your business. Making it affordable is theirs. Sell your extra unused diabetes supplies for up to $50 per box and support a worthy cause. Rated a Better Business Bureau accredited A+ rating for over 5 years. Partnered with 98.5 The Sports Hub and affiliated with the American Diabetes Association. Make sure to check them out again. That is teststrips with a Z.com. Finally, we'd like to thank the UFC South Austin Gym, located at 9900 South Interstate 35 in Austin, Texas. Learn how you can get 3 free classes when you sign up and mention the SFLC podcast. Be sure to call them at 512-292-1900.
SFLC podcast.
All right, fight fans, welcome back to the SFLC podcast. Here I am, Ryan Sprague, and a lot to talk about as we ended up having UFC 242 over the past weekend. We all know that start time, a little different, a little bit more than we're used to, but looked like it did some good numbers. And then, of course, we have a lot more coming up. But before we get into that, I am Ryan Sprague. Also want to introduce on the line a new guest to at least this portion of the show. I know that he had been on the show, or at least on Mike Heck's show, a lot, and he's on Between the Links as a regular guest. Keith Schillen joining us on the other end. Keith, thank you for taking the time with us today.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I appreciate being on the show. I'm a big fan of you and all the work you do and the hustle you guys do over at Miami News. But I got to correct you because you said something wrong.
Uh-oh.
You say that I'm a guest on Mike's show, but that's actually my show.
Oh!
Just we haven't told that to Mike yet. I'm just kidding. Mike does a great job.
No, I like that. No, that's great. We're going to have to bust on him for that then. Oh, man. So, first things first. I know that you've been around MMA and you've been covering this for some time. So, you know, when we kind of bring people on, you know, everybody kind of has a different reason for getting into this. We find it from fighters, trainers, promoters, etc. Everybody has like a different reason. So Keith, you know, what really kind of brought you into the foreground of where you are today?
Well, MMA Media, I've been doing it for about 3 years. The end of fall will be about 3 years. And it just kind of happened by accident. No, I've kind of had my foot in MMA for a really long time. I even fought way back in the day. I fought once, I won, I never fought again. I got to retire undefeated, of course. But I've actually judged in the past, and then I got into MMA Media, and it just kind of happened by accident. I was in a Facebook group that it was just a regular sports group, you know, football, basketball, all those. And I noticed that no one ever talked about MMA, so I started bringing in MMA talk, and we kind of became a very popular, like, there's a small clique of people. We started putting a hashtag on it, and I used to put hashtag the MMA Takeover, and it was the MMA Takeover of Sports Talk, which was the name of the group. And then we just grew so big, and we got popular, and people said, "Man, why don't you guys, you know, write your own website, you know, we'll create your own content." We started doing that. We created our own content, MMA Takeover. I have since stopped that website because we kind of outgrew it, and now I've hooked up with other sites, and that's kind of pretty much, that's a very short version.
Very short version. I can tell I'm dealing with another Northeasterner with a little hint of that accent.
Yeah, it's funny. I never knew I had an accent until I started doing podcasts and I listened back to it. I was like, oh man, I do sound different than these other guys.
Well, you know, it's funny, Keith, because I've lived in the Northeast. I've lived in the Midwest. And for some reason, when I'm out in the Northeast, people say that I have a Midwestern accent. When I'm in the Midwest, people say that I have a Northeastern accent. I thought I had non-regional diction, but apparently, depending on my surroundings, I actually go the inverse of wherever I am, and I had no idea.
So, yeah, I would try to do that, but I don't think I'll ever be confused for anywhere else. I don't think anybody would say I have a Southern accent or anything like that. I'm pretty sure they get the, I get called the Boston accent, but I'm more Rhode Island, but...
Right.
I'll take it.
You know, I guess if anything, what people are hearing is more the diction and the pronunciation from me. I don't think it's so much an accent. It's more of a how I accent words. And that they'll confuse for different parts of the country. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Anyway, we could talk about, you know, dialect as long as we want. But let's kind of jump into this. So... You know, there was Bellator over the weekend, which unfortunately, due to circumstances beyond my control, I was not able to watch. But, you know, I do realize that, you know, Ryan Bader ended up kind of having a no contest with an eye poke. And then you ended up having some skirmish in the ring at the end of it. Keith, I'm going to kind of defer this one to you. With, you know, UFC 242 being in Russia and being in an earlier fight time, did you find it difficult to then turn around and watch an entire Bellator card?
I didn't because, I mean, this is what I love. I love watching it all day long. But I could definitely understand how many people would. Do they'd be burnt out if they started from the very first prelim of the UFC and went all day. Yeah, I definitely hear how people struggled with it. I didn't, but yeah, definitely many people would.
And I know that there was a lot of fights for that featured New World Grand Prix. Very well informed that Emmanuel Sanchez ended up winning in his debut, his featherweight tournament win. So that was a good win for him. But outside of obviously knowing what happened with Ryan Bader and that kind of being, I guess you'd say anticlimactic is the best word. What would you say was probably what stuck out most with Bellator that night for you?
I think a little bit of changing of the guard when it comes to the featherweight division. The one that, I'm not saying he's a favorite to win it or anything, but seeing a guy like Pat Curran, a former champion in the division, get absolutely destroyed by Adam Morris, the young, you know, 20, 25-year-old guy, I'm not exactly sure, he's very, very young, undefeated, and to see him take out a former champion, a guy that's had battles with some of the best guys in Bellator history, and then Boris make it look kind of easy. It just that's what it stuck out to me. Seemed like a pass in the guard. A guy like Sam Cecilia, another veteran in the sport, getting taken out by Pedro Carvalho. You know, Taiwan Claxton, even though he lost, I thought he had moments in the fight against Amanda Sanchez. She looked good to it. It just a change in the guard, if that makes sense. Like, just there's a lot of young guys in this tournament that probably shouldn't be overlooked.
Well, and again, we know that Emmanuel Sanchez had a dogfight with Pitbull and wanted to run it back. And for a hot minute until the upcoming fight that Pitbull had, that looked like a pretty feasible answer, right? Like, hey, let's see if they can do this again because that was a war. And then all of a sudden we have this going on, Pitbull moving up, moving down, kind of going all over the board. You know, so you have this featherweight Grand Prix that's going on. Emmanuel Sanchez comes back. He wins his debut. Like you said, you see some of these veterans in the sport, Sam Cecilia lose, Pat Curran lose. It's a little early to say. I'll admit that. It's very early to say. But based on the performances you saw, does it look like it's kind of Emmanuel's to take from what we saw from Saturday night?
I wouldn't say it's his to take, but I think he's in a very good position. Well, obviously, he's in the quarterfinals, so that's obviously a good start. But the main competition, so the back things up, me and a bunch of guys, to make some fun with these belts, so we do a pool. And what we do, we kind of do almost like fantasy football. We all pull numbers. The guy who wins gets the first pick, he picks whichever fighter he wants. Then the second guy goes, and the third guy goes, and everyone has a guy. I pulled the third pick, and one guy picked Pitbull, the second guy picked Antonio McGee, and I surprised everyone when I picked Emmanuel Sanchez because I liked where he was in the bracket. I mean, there's no bracket yet. It's going to change what's going on, but I thought he had a very winnable fight. I think he's experienced with five-round fights. I think he's well-rounded. I think he's getting better. He showed how well he is against Pitbull. But also what I like about him is Pitbull has a absolute, like, killer coming at him in the very first round in Juan Archuleta. So right away, one of the favorites in the tournament is going to be out. Either it's going to be the two-weight champion, Juan Archuleta, Pitbull, or it's going to be the guy on this huge winning streak in Juan Archuleta. One of those guys is going to be out. Also, one of those guys is going to be the champion going the next round. And I feel like if you're the champion, there's always that guy who's going to have that chip on the shoulder who's going to say, I'm not going to take the A-0 out. I want the champion. So I feel like the guy who has the belt is going to actually have the hardest road all the way through. Like perhaps AJ McKee goes, hey, man, I want Pitbull. I want him now. Or you know, Darren Caldwell or Henry Corrales or whoever. What do you think? Adam Boris. They're like, hey, I want that. Well, Manuel Sanchez, I just interviewed him, and he's talking about like getting fights back. Like, oh, I'd like to run it back with who did he say? He said Pat Curran. He's out. So that, but who's that guy? Daniel Bishop. It's the fight that he thought he won. So that seems like a much easier route than going after Pitbull, and I think that's wise.
I couldn't agree with you more. And again, we've seen all of those fighters kind of go out, and you're right, that Juan Archuleta fight, that is by no means a cake fight, and that's going to put a target on whoever wins that. And as far as Emmanuel Sanchez is concerned, yeah, he probably has the easiest path to at least the championship, because...
Well, we don't know the path yet, that's the only problem.
Well, I mean, absolutely, but you and I, being around MMA long enough, can say, hey, Emmanuel Sanchez ended up winning, Pat Curran lost, Sam Cecilia lost, we probably want to keep the person who went to war with Pitbull on the opposite side, so to speak.
Well, that's not how they're doing it, though. They're doing it the old K-1 style, which is after the first round, they're going to pull bingo balls, or whatever you call them. Like,
oh, wow.
Ping pong balls, and they're going to pull them out, and whoever has the number one can pick their spot, so they can, so there'll be four events, and they'll pick their spot. And then the second guy, he can pick the spot he wants, or he can pick the first guy.
Wow.
And, you know, as there's a bracket, and then they go. They start putting themselves in the bracket. So, I mean, the winner of Pitbull and Archuleta is going to have a huge target. I don't know if Manuel Sanchez will. So that's why I think it's a good situation. But who knows? Sanchez might surprise us and pick Pitbull.
And try and take him out early.
Yeah. And then the other thing you got to think about with Pitbull and Juan Archuleta, both of us just said how competitive that fight could be. Will either guy be healthy enough after what we expect to be a, you know, gunslinging fight? Would either guy be healthy enough to even go on to the next round? So who knows? Sanchez is healthy now, and he's already in the second round, so that is an advantage.
That's a great point. So, yeah, the featherweight, again, Scott Coker has struck gold with me over the past few years with these World Grand Prix, you know, me being ringside to be able to watch Fedor fight was just incredible. And then, you know, seeing how successful the heavyweight World Grand Prix was, and then running it back with all these different weight classes, it's really a cool concept that he's kind of, I don't want to say that he's reinvented the wheel, but he's kind of reinvented it, right? He brought it back to, you know, where now you might look at this and say it's archaic. The only thing that he didn't do, which was something that Chael Sonnen actually brought up early in this heavyweight competition, which is funny because Chael is a light heavyweight, which, well, let's be honest, but regardless, was that he thought going back to the old school style of this whole tournament gets done in one night thing. Now, no athletic commission is going to commission that. You and I both understand that now.
Yeah, I don't like it anyway, to be honest. It's just different. You can't compare MMA in 2019 to 1993. A lot of people think we tend to sensationalize the one-night tournaments, but we forget, like, even when the UFC is doing it, how many times an alternate had to replace a guy.
Right.
And fights usually didn't even last that long. You go to, you know, UFC 4, 5, 6, I mean, the fights were usually under a minute. You compare that to Taiwan Claxton and Emmanuel Sanchez, which neither one of us would say, oh, that was an absolute war, that's a legend. No, but it was a fight that went 9, 10 minutes. If you took that and UFC 5, they'd be calling it a legendary fight, an incredible fight, and this and that. So to be able to sustain that, that's why I love the PFL. I actually did the previews for the PFL for Sure Dog, and I'm a big supporter of the PFL. But I hate the two fights in one night because I think you should be fresh, as fresh as you possibly could be in the fight for a guy. I also think you should game plan. I mean, you can't game plan for the next guy. And then last year we saw guys, you know, alternates coming in, and it was just, I thought it was a disaster. And I really wish they changed it, but they kept the same.
Well, and again, these are all people who are going to kind of do things a little differently. I'm a big fan of PFL as well. You know, we have a lot of content that's going to be coming out here in the next week or two with my MMA news. You know, Douglas Geller, I'm going to give a shout out to him for kind of heading that up. So, you know, you dropped PFL. I got to drop PFL as well.
Yeah, it doesn't end. I like that one.
So, yeah, but again, I think that the featherweight, having all of those fights in one night was actually a really cool concept, you know, because the last couple of ones we've seen, you know, one fight happen one night or two fights happen in one night. But then, you know, you're waiting 4 or 5 months until the next fight because, well, you've already made it to the quarterfinals or the semifinals. So this is a unique way of kind of seeing all of these. And it actually kind of helped because if Bellator could run this back and not have the no contest in the main event, I assure you they would want that. So this featherweight, these featherweight fights kind of saved that a little bit, don't you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm into the featherweight tournament. Out of all the tournaments so far, I've been a better fan of all of them. But this is the one I'm most excited about. You know, 16, it's a deeper field. I think it's a higher competition. I mean, I think the welterweight was very competitive. You know, there's some really good guys. But I think this is an even better field. But what I was thinking about, imagine just being a fighter and you've got to win. You know, you're Emmanuel Sanchez, you got to win. You're walking to the back and this Pedro Carvalho who just got to win the same night. And it's, you know, you see a guy in your weight class, it might be a little already awkward. But now you see a guy in your weight class who's in the tournament who very well could be your next opponent. Like, there's a very good chance that's his next opponent. And you see each other. I can imagine being those guys. Like, how awkward would that be? You know, like, hey, good fight. Maybe we'll fight next, you know?
Yeah, well, it's, especially with the blind ping pong balls that you're talking about. But it's interesting because you were talking about game planning, right? You know, this is going to be, there's going to be a little bit of strategy to this one. You know, it's not up to the powers that be to match make at least this set tournament schedule. You know, a 1 seed takes on an 8 seed. Now you kind of pick your seed. So you got to wonder, well, if I end up taking out a guy, you know, who's favored earlier, am I going to be healthy for the later rounds?
Yeah.
You know, but, and I think that that's probably more strategic than you'll end up seeing a lot of these fighters, because most of the interviews that I get, Keith, I ask fighters, hey, how much time do you spend on film? And unless you're like the John Joneses of the world, you know, who just are fascinated by every aspect of a fighter's fight and will just analyze every possible area of opportunity, most fighters that I talk to really don't spend a lot of time on game film. You know, they focus on themselves. They let their coaches kind of handle that. And they just have the, you know, their sparring partners kind of throw in a lot of stuff that they saw from the game.
Yeah, I don't know if I always agree with strategy, because, I mean, you see some of the best fighters who do it, John Jones, DC, George St. Pierre. I mean, these are guys who did the tape study. So, I mean, I would probably want to act like the all-time greats that I just named and not. But some people, it's a psychological thing that if you're watching film, you either psych yourself out when you see something good, or you see a hole in them and you focus on that hole so much that now you actually leave yourself open. You know, if you're saying, hey, man, I got to watch the right hand, I got to watch the right hand. And now all of a sudden you're getting hit with a left hook because you're too busy watching the right hand. So that might backfire. But you know, another thing that a lot of people don't think about this tournament, two things that stand out to me about why I love the ping pong balls thing, is a fighter can pull the number one, and there's four events. He can say, man, I'm a little banged up, or I know I'm going to have a tough weight cut. Let me put myself all the way to the end so I have a little bit more time to rest up. So that's a strategy. But the other strategy, or the other thing you have to think about is, it's not like Bellator offers you a contract, hey Pitbull, do you want to fight AJ McKee? And you just take that and say, well, it's not personal, they just offered it to me. If AJ McKee pulls a number and he puts himself in a spot and Pitbull picks that spot to fight him, and it's open spots, it's like, no, you're saying you want me. It's not like, you can't deny it. So now it's gonna naturally make it personal. Like, not only am I willing to fight you, but I'm saying I'm gonna beat you, that's why I picked you.
That's a great point. And I remember on a Bellator press conference, AJ McKee and Pitbull kind of went at each other more than they seemed to go at their own opponents. I don't know if you were on that call.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
That was a fun one. It was hard to get a word in edgewise, you know, if you were media. But, you know, we sat there and it's like, you know, it almost seemed like they didn't intend to, but they were throwing shade at their upcoming opponent. Because they were talking more about an upcoming fight with each other. So yeah. I think you're right. I mean, depending on who picks when, yeah. If Emmanuel Sanchez, or not Emmanuel Sanchez, I'm sorry, if Pitbull ends up getting that ping pong ball early, And AJ McKee, is if nobody's put themselves up against Pitbull by the time that AJ McKee gets called, I see it very likely that AJ McKee is going to put himself up there right away.
I think a lot of people don't want Pitbull, or if one beats Pitbull, he'll be on a huge target because he'll be the new champion on the huge streak. So I don't know if it happens. It's going to actually happen. I think they're going to do it on a Bellator broadcast. So it's going to be televised. I think that's going to be really fun to watch. And it's just something different, man. It's going to remind me a lot of like the NBA draft lottery, you know?
I think except the Knicks aren't always getting the first pick.
There you go.
Yeah, I went there. I had no problem saying it. I stand by it. But I think we kind of wrapped up everything that we saw from Bellator.
Only thing I do want to say about Bellator, about the main event.
Sure.
Obviously, we don't want to see a fight end with a poke in the eye. I'm surprised the commentary team kept talking about how they had struggled to see it. I thought it was very clear to poke in the eye. That said, Ryan Bader was kind of putting on Chuck Congo. And I think it's a terrible situation for Bellator. Because you almost have to run it back now, and you got to run it back, Bader defending his title against a Chuck Congo, who kind of put himself in the situation that you didn't want to give a title fight, but he just kept winning, so you kind of had to be reluctant to give it to him. But besides that, you have Ryan Bader, who's a champion of two weight classes. He's not going to be able to defend his belt at light heavyweight like you want to. He's probably going to have to defend it against Congo. And now you've held up two divisions even longer. It's like, man, I don't think it could have been a worse outcome for Bellator to then have that happen.
That's a good point. I forgot about that. Yeah, I hate, and that's why I'm sorry. I know that everybody wants to chase after belt after belt after belt. You know, I see this in boxing. We see it now in combat sports and MMA. You know, stick to your weight class. You know, and I think that's probably why I'm a huge Vasily Lomachenko fan, right? Because he's not trying to move up and take belts from other weight classes. He wants to unify all the belts in his own weight class and then see what happens. You know, we've seen too many fighters in all these sports win a belt. Now they want to move up. You know, most recently we've seen, obviously, was Henry Cejudo going up and taking on Dillashaw. And now all of a sudden he's acting like a fucking fool and saying that he wants to fight Valentina Shevchenko, which is just absurd. Or no, the new one is Zhang Li. Oh my God.
Wei Li Zhang.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, in the midst of all this, you're right. We end up waiting so long to see legitimate contenders come out and take these fights, and now you're hammed up even longer. So you're
if you're the UFC, you have Cejudo get injured. Now you have to wait for the champ to come back. You have to wait for the champ to come back for two weight classes, holding up like flyweight and bantamweight is waiting for the champ, and that's terrible. And then when he comes back after being out, so it looks like it's going to be early 2020, so he's going to be out for over half a year or 9 months, something he actually fights. He's going to have to pick which weight class he's going to defend the belt, and then the other weight class is going to have to wait even longer for him to defend. By the time Cejudo defends the second belt, whatever weight class he decides, it's probably going to be next summer.
Yes, and it's just, it's too much. You know, it was one thing when we had Amanda Nunes end up winning the women's featherweight. I actually think that was the best thing for the UFC because the women's featherweight division was folding anyway. No one was really fighting, you know, and finally someone came in and beat Cyborg. That wasn't handpicked for Cyborg to win. And she ended up going over to Bellator anyway. So it was a win-win. But every other division, you know, you look at what happened. Conor McGregor spent so long not defending it that he was stripped of one of them or he had to relinquish the belt. You know, you had DC holding both the heavyweight and the light heavyweight. And now he doesn't hold either.
Yeah, nobody's defended both weight classes yet.
And I don't think there's a point to, you know, what do we really learn from this? We end up seeing that maybe a lighter 205-pounder can get lucky striking, you know, somebody who's 250 pounds. That's the only thing I see out of it.
Yeah, I think you're right, man.
And I'm sorry. That's why weight classes exist. I mean, if I'm 160 pounds or 155 pounds, I don't want to go up to welterweight. Those guys are killers. They'd murder me. You know, that 15 pounds, that means a lot. And some people are willing to see it, and some people, you know, like to just see their favorite fighter fight. The other thing is, if you actually fight to defend these belts, you're going to burn yourself out. You're not going to be able to defend the belts. So hold on to one. Let the other one go. Congratulations, you won it. Make it almost ceremonial. That's why we have the pound-for-pound fighter fighting list.
Yeah. You know who said that he does not want to move up? They said you. They asked him about moving up to welterweight. He said, no, I'm a lightweight. I'm going to stay here.
And there's no point for him to move up, because what ended up happening, and we might as well get right into this.
It was a transition.
That was a great transition, Keith. I love it.
I was talking about that softball play, and he slammed it.
So, yeah, Khabib defends against Dustin Poirier in a phenomenal fashion. No, nothing against Dustin, but Khabib was clearly just the far superior fighter. And now everybody's sitting here saying, well, we've tried this four times before. Might as well go for lucky number five, booking Tony Ferguson, right? Well, pump the brakes, because we have Dustin Gaethje taking on Donald Cowboy Cerrone this weekend. Conor McGregor is sitting there talking shit about fighting Dustin Poirier or fighting whomever. And then you still have, you know, the Paul Felders of the world who end up winning, much to the dismay of some other people that we saw against Edson Barboza. And I think even Barboza's people are kind of trying to contest that win, but, you know, it's going to be hard to overturn. Regardless, without getting too convoluted into this to get back into it, we'll talk about the main event, Khabib defeating Dustin Poirier. I don't think anyone was surprised. I know that there were a lot of people who were trying to throw the odds on it because it would have been a big payout had Dustin Diamond Poirier won. But we couldn't, in real, you know, confidence, say that the undefeated 27-0 undisputed lightweight champion in UFC was going to end up losing, right?
I mean, I didn't predict that. I predicted that Khabib won, but I don't think there's a question that Dustin Poirier could win. Do I think Khabib deserved to be a big favorite? Yeah, I do. He's truly amazing. And I'm going to say something controversial right now. I think he's the best fighter in the world. I don't think anybody's better than him.
Well, and as we look at it right now, they've given it to Jon Jones with Khabib sitting at number two. So
yeah, no, I mean, if you want to put Jon Jones as your number one, go ahead. I have an argument against it, but I got no beef with it. It's Jon Jones. In my opinion, Jon Jones is the greatest fighter of all time. But to me, greatest fighter of all time and greatest fighter right now is two different things. And I'm watching Jon Jones winning boring decisions against Anthony Smith and actually losing a scorecard to Thiago Santos. And I'm watching Khabib just maul every single person that he faces. I mean, if you take his recent stretch of wins, recent stretch was 28 wins down. But I mean, if you talk about just last couple of years, the fight that he gets the most people saying it was a poor performance was against Ally Quinta. He took a 24 hours notice. I was there live. He had a 50-43 scorecard. And that's the worst performance he's had in the last two or three years. A 50-43 scorecard. I mean, that's clean sweeping five rounds and then getting two rounds 10-8.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you. And again, that was, we don't have to talk about what happened in Madison Square Garden. We're all very well aware of what happened there because right now I still believe there's an ongoing lawsuit right now that was saying that it wasn't supposed to be Ally Aquinta fighting for that. It was supposed to be another fighter who was actually pulled from the card because of injury sustained from Connor's dolly.
Sure.
You know, so, I mean, and that's a tough one anyway, and I'm not saying anything really more than that. But again, there's a lot that goes into this. So, as we look past the fact that, yes, Khabib won a very impressive victory over Dustin Poirier, Keith, I throw it out to you. Every name in the universe is being thrown not just at Khabib, but at each other. So we kind of have these top five and the champion all trying to say that they should be fighting for, you know, Khabib or fighting Khabib directly. What are you doing with all of this? It's a mess, Keith. What do you do with it?
Well, first of all, the first question I asked is, who gets Khabib? And to me, it's a no-brainer. It's got to be Tony Ferguson. I mean, the guy, the last time he lost a fight, women weren't even in the MMA. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the UFC, the last time he lost a fight was 2012. I mean, the 7 years, he's on a, 12 fight winning streak and arguably the best division in MMA. He just went against Donald Cerrone and, I mean, beat him up so bad, his eyes were all swollen shut. I mean, he's beating the brakes off everyone he faces. I know it's a little bit, you know, people hesitate to make that fight because it's been booked four times and it hasn't gone through. But nobody has a stronger argument than
me. That's true.
For if I were to be the 21st. To me, it's like, I can't even hear the argument. Like, it's not even close. It's like, it's silly. It's like people who talk about, like, the world is flat. Like, that's the argument if you don't pick 21st. It's that ridiculous.
Well, and the only quasi-decent argument I've had, or I've heard about Tony not getting Khabib, is that they've tried to make that fight four times. Well, I'm sorry. If you're Dana White, you're going to have to keep fucking making it until it actually happens.
Yeah, I mean, Urkel kept asking the girl from next door out on a date, and finally she said yes, right?
Exactly. Wow, I haven't heard a Family Matters reference in forever, but okay.
So anybody who listens to me do podcasts knows this is why I stay away from pop culture, because I'm terrible at it.
That's okay. I'm right there with you. I think you and I are probably roughly the same age based on you just quoted fucking Family Matters.
Yeah, I couldn't remember the girl's name that he had a crush on, but
I think it's Laura.
Laura, yeah. Didn't they like marry at the end or something like that?
Something like that. But I think it was to Stefan. Jesus, why are you aging us right now, Keith? I'm already sitting there last night bitching that everyone else is watching, you know, the Bill Burr and Dave Chappelle stand up, and I'm sitting there watching Beverly Hills 90210, but you know, it's one of those things. I'm sitting here explaining to everybody, oh, this person, you know, played this or played this character in the original show, and I'm sounding like a giant nerd. Anyway, moving on so that nobody wants to call me a nerd.
I lost in the finals of Between the Links. Mike had asked, which two celebrities would you like to see fight, and I couldn't think of two celebrities, so I went with Flava Flav, and I said the guy who plays Iron Man. I couldn't think of his name.
It plays, oh my god.
Yeah, that's how bad I am when it comes to pop culture and stuff.
Well, I'm over the celebrity fights right now. I've got to be honest with you. We've heard everyone and their brother do it. You know, we heard fucking, who was it? Lockhart call out Mike Dolce for a fight on Ariel's show.
Yeah.
I'll then turn around and say, if that's the case, I'll call out Ariel for a fight. There, how does that one sound? Ariel, the gauntlet's been thrown. The challenge has been issued. It's on you, brother. but anyway, back to the lightweight. Yeah, I agree with you. It has to be Tony. But then all of a sudden, you know, that there's a good point, part of this where this weekend, either Cowboy or Gaethje could win in an impressive enough fashion to at least make the argument, right?
I don't think so. I mean, especially Dastarone. Dastarone just got smashed by Tony Ferguson. So, I mean, how could he skip Tony Ferguson?
Yeah.
Gaethje could say, well, I just smashed Tony Ferguson. Yeah, but what kind of win streak are you on? You've won. It would be three in a row. Well, that's cool. You won three in a row. 21st and 12 now. Like, to me, I really can't see the argument.
Right. So I think you're right. The best thing, again, I've been saying this since day one, and I actually believe the only person who's probably crazy enough to beat Khabib is Tony Ferguson.
He might be. I mean, I'm a little concerned because of the Kevin Lee fight. Kevin Lee was able to take down Tony and did very well in the beginning until he kind of gassed out. He had a staph infection. But Tony Ferguson also has a style that gassed people up.
Yes.
And Tony Ferguson, my man Dan Tom made a good point of this, that he does the Grammy rolls. And that's what Abel Chihilja was able to do to keep Grammy rolling. And Habib struggled with that. But let's not forget, Habib also set the record for most takedowns in that fight. So it's like everything wasn't perfect for Abel Chihilja in that fight. But I got a question for you. So we're kind of in this conundrum where we have, you know, Cerrone, Gaethje, the winner, you know, I think we both agreed probably shouldn't get the title fight. So I am looking this as the winners get a big prize. And tell me if you're with this, but I think the winner should get the man himself, Conor McGregor.
I'm not opposed to the idea of them getting awarded a big fight. But based on what we've seen and how the new rankings have come out, Conor's got to get his fucking life in order first. And I don't think it's there yet. Going on Ariel's show and making an apology as a statement doesn't show me that he's really in much of a position to do anything. I think that, you know, does it bring money to the UFC? Of course it does. Whoever ends up getting that fight, of course, is going to make massive money. But I'm still worried about seeing if Conor's going to end up coming back. And do you really want to give, you know, Conor McGregor this high of a competition? Because, I mean, he's on a two-fight losing streak. He's lost two of his last three of his last four. And the last time he fought was, you know, not a good performance.
Well, yeah, you're counting the Mayweather fight.
Yeah, well, I am counting the Mayweather fight. Hey, look, if the boxing commission is going to allow it to count as a win for Mayweather, I'm going to allow it to count as a loss for Conor. That's just how it works.
No, but I mean, like, to me, it's, you're counting as an MMA fight. Like, he lost this many MMA fights.
Oh, okay. Well, in, you know, fighting, I mean, yes.
I mean, I don't know how many people actually thought Conor's going to win.
Well, no, nobody feasibly could have. Everybody that I listened to that said that, I'm like, wow, you're drunk. And they probably actually were drunk, if I'm being honest. But
yeah, they were just fanboys. I mean, I don't know if they were intelligently really picked up.
Okay, so...
I'm just trying to think of hot take. They're like, oh, what's the hot take I would be? It's one of those, like, I'm going to throw out the Hail Mary. If it happens, I can tell you how smart I am.
Yeah, exactly. So, but okay, we throw out the Mayweather fight. So now he's lost two of his last fights. Or two of his last three fights. You know, and he... He lost very dominating. I'm sorry.
It'd be two out of four because he had the back to back wins. He had the Nate Diaz, the win over Nate, and then the win over Eddie Alvarez.
Oh, that's right. Okay, yeah.
But still, 2 out of 4, sure.
Yeah, you know, and the first fight against Diaz, he lost convincingly. In the second fight, yeah, I could have seen that either way. I actually scored that one for Diaz.
Yeah, no, I gave it for McGregor, but it could easily be the score. It comes down to that second round.
Okay, let's get back to your original question. Cowboy versus Justin Gaethje, winner gets Conor McGregor. I'm half on board with that. Here's how I'm going to say this. If Cowboy wins, give him Conor because that's going to do massive numbers. Give Cowboy, you know, that big money fight that he probably has deserved as being a journeyman in the UFC. If Justin Gaethje wins, I don't know. Let's see what plays out between the Tony Dustin Khabib debacle, uh-huh. and then see that, or maybe I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do with Justin Gaethje because I don't think he's up to, you know, Tony's level. He's not up to Dustin's level. Clearly not at Khabib's level. So if he ends up winning, I mean, yeah, by the numbers, by the rankings, it works for Conor McGregor, but I think we'd much rather see Cowboy versus Conor than Justin Gaethje versus Conor. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it'll almost be like a lifetime achievement award for Cerrone. And I know it's weird to talk about Conor as like an award, but Cerrone kind of deserves it. Now, I don't think Cerrone's going to win. I know we're going to get into that later, but I think Gaethje is such a fun stylistic matchup. That's why I would love to see Conor be, you know, the guy who's going to be coming forward nonstop, crazy style, and then Conor. I mean, you can be in the Conor love or the Conor hate camp. No matter what camp you're in, you got to admit that Conor's a fantastic striker. And if he hits you with that left hand, it could be good night. So that's why I think it's such a fascinating fight if they could put Gaethje and Conor against each other.
I think that, and again, in an ideal world, yeah, we're going to see one of those fights come to fruition. But if I'm the powers that be at UFC, I'm you know, sitting Conor down. I'm saying, no more shit. No more shenanigans. We're not going to put up with this. You know, Dana has time and time and time again had the option to do what no other sport really did and take the reins on punishing the athletes. And he never did. He always left it up to the individual state athletic commissions. And that bothered me. And I think that if you're going to end up taking this step in the right direction, someone's got to come in and really put the foot down on Conor. Because right now, Conor's acting like a child, and he's being rewarded for acting like a child. And I'm not down with that.
Well, he does let the athletic commission or let the outside powers, the police and stuff, come up with the punishments. It's kind of his way of standing back and staying out of it. And then no matter what, he can say to Conor, yeah, it wasn't up to me. So... It's kind of like a cowardly thing.
It is. So. I mean, when Bud Selig was the commissioner of Major League Baseball, you know, we didn't really see that, right? They came in, they ended up setting up these, you know, sanctions for betting and for PEDs when Silver was in charge of the NBA, and we ended up seeing that fight that broke out with Ron Artest in Detroit and Indiana. He stepped in. He made these changes that happened in the sport. Some would say for the better, some would say for the worse, but he made changes. You know, Roger Goodell is probably hell incarnate, but in fairness to him, every time that we see the domestic abuse things, we revert back to the commission that he ended up setting up to basically have people come in and talk about, you know, the domestic abuse problem that was happening in the NFL. Right now, Dana's the only person, he's the only, I guess, for lack of a better term, commissioner in a major sport that really hasn't done anything to address a major problem that exists in the sport.
Well, yeah, I'd say this issue, I think they have addressed it. I think they do. As much as we get on the UFC for doing making some mistakes, I think what they've done in USADA, they've kind of come to the forefront when it comes to, you know, abusing performance-enhancing drugs.
Oh, don't even get me started on that, Keith. I could go for days on that.
Okay.
I mean, I agree with you. Hey, congratulations using USADA, but I still need to know how John Jones and Brock Lesnar tested on the same day for the same card. One was able to fight, one wasn't.
John Jones' test was a pre-test, so it wasn't the same day. They fought on the same, they were scheduled to fight the card, but the tests were from different days.
Are you sure about that? Because I thought that they were tested on the same day. The timing of that came out just horribly.
Yeah, no, Jones, I think, was weeks ahead. Because I think it makes it up, I think it makes it up the timing of the Brock Lesnar at UFC 200 with the John Jones with Anthony Smith on. I'm not Anthony Smith, Gustafson, the second one, where they moved the whole card and the picograms and all that stuff. The second DC card.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the second DC card. You're right. All right, but regardless, I'm still just floored.
But to go back to like the domestic violence or anything that's out of the cage, I think the reason why the UFC is easier is simply because I believe the UFC is more reliant on the star than the other sports are. If stars come and go in other sports, and the sport will still remain because there's 100 years of fandom born into people. Like people, it's very rare for someone to be born an MMA fan, but someone born a Red Sox fan, or born a Yankee fan, or born a Patriots fan, or Packers fan, or whatever, and then they grow up, the whole supporting this. You know, if Tom Brady retires, they'll still be Patriots fans. If Aaron Rodgers retires, they'll still be Packers fans. They'll still, you know what I mean? And the sport will go on without these stars. And obviously the sport of MMA world, but the attraction that Conor brings in. I mean, you go to Buffalo Wild when Conor was fighting, you compare it to, you know, when Max Holloway and Frankie Edgar's fighting, it's just not the same. The people aren't out, they're not coming out. That's why I believe the UFC, they need their stars more than other sports do.
Okay,
Make sense?
Yeah, I have nothing to say about that. All right, duly noted.
So, we go down to Conor, UFC, we could just turn into a 4-hour show, because I mean, we really could go all day.
Yeah, exactly, you know, and again, I'm not saying, and you're right, I was putting Conor as his own broad spectrum opposed to an entire league, but, you know, Conor is obviously not the only person that has had, you know, problems with stardom in the UFC. You know, even Khabib, when he ended up going after Dylan Danis after that Conor fight, you know, the John Jones thing that we keep hearing about, and, you know, Colby Covington, look at his stuff. Some of the things that he's said, you know, there are certain hush laws that you can kind of put into these that you can't really do with UFC. But that's another conversation, Keith, for another day. Like I said, we could literally go another hour on this topic alone.
Here's a perfect example. Paul Daly punched Josh Koscheck. He was kicked out of the UFC, said never fight in the UFC again because of a second punch after the fight. Now, the situation isn't perfect, but Jorge Masvidal second punched Leon Edwards. And the reaction to Paul Daly was, oh, disgust. And everyone was like, oh, my God. And people hated Josh Koscheck. Don't forget that. People hated Koscheck. And still people were like, oh, man, that's a second punch. Like, people were like, that's a bitch move. He should never fight again. But then Jorge Masvidal sits down, does an interview, says three pieces of soda, and he becomes a star. And there's no punishment against Jorge Masvidal. And instead, they're putting him in main events. They're putting him with special belts. Like he's getting the complete opposite treatment of Paul Daly. Well, because his punch turned him into a star.
Yeah.
So that's why there's the double standard.
Okay. Yeah, no, I absolutely see what you're saying there. So, you know, we kind of get into a little diatribe, which welcome to the show, Keith. That happens frequently. You are now part of the troupe.
There
you go. But yeah, as far as the welterweight's concerned, or I'm sorry, the lightweight's concerned, we're going to really see how this plays out. I really hope that the next fight for Khabib is against Tony. I don't see it happening in 2019. I see it happening early 2020. You know, Khabib even said he wants to take time off. He said that after the victory. I have no problem with that. You know, he's defended his belt. Let him enjoy it for a little bit, and we'll see what happens, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the only way that he could get a card would be the very end of December card where they'd like to stack it up, but it probably like probably not. It's probably something. I mean, it'd probably be January, February. There's a lot of stars lined up that are not booked. I mean, John Jones, Habib, obviously, if Conor comes back, he's actually mentioned he wanted to come back before the end of the year. So there's three guys right there who need big fights. They still have to make the Usman Covington fight. So this, yeah, I just don't see it happening this year. I think you're right.
Put a pin on the Usman Covington fight. We'll talk about that when we get into the news segment of this show. But moving on, as we kind of go back into UFC 242, and if you're still with us, it means that you follow MMA just as much as Keith and I do. So two things I want to kind of look at in the welterweight division. On the early prelims, Bilal Muhammad, who is a fan favorite there in Abu Dhabi, got a very impressive and his first submission win in the UFC. He's been right there, and I talked with Mike Heck, and you know, of course, he's a Chicago. Bilal is a Chicago fighter, and you know, he gave Chicago big ups, which was really cool. But Bilal's always been that fighter that has always been on the cusp of breaking the top 15 for welterweight, and he ended up taking out Takashi Sato. And Sato gave him some problems, specifically in the second round. But Bilal came through, you know, in a true fighter fashion and got that done in the third round with a submission. With that win for the welterweight, and we kind of start to see where the welterweight division is for that, you know, number 10 through 15. I mean, the welterweight division is also just as stacked as the lightweight division when you end up having people like Damian Maia, Ben Askren, Anthony Pettis, Robbie Lawler, Neil Magny. You know, these are also people who have been doing this for a long time in this division. So you have to wonder, and I'll ask you, Keith, is a win that Bilal just had warranting him for a top 15 fight in the event of trying to get into the top 15?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think if not, he should be matched with someone who's also knocking on the door. I thought his call out of Li Jingliang is like the perfect one. It's a guy who's just outside the top 15 rankings, and they're both coming off. I mean, Li Jingliang wins in China, co-main event. Big knockout, an upset over against Alessio Celeste Dos Santos, a guy that I believe was in the top 15, when it happened. So yeah, I think that I love Bilal Muhammad's performance. I thought he got put in a match that he was supposed to win, which a lot of times kind of becomes a trap. And I thought it was a pillar-to-post performance where he just, I mean, I thought he was, I thought he looked great on his feet, on the ground. A little bit of moment he got in danger, he handled it easily, got a submission, and then he won the post-fight moment. I thought it was perfect. But yeah, they put, like, I would love to see him against, I mean, you look at, I pulled up the UFC rankings near the bottom top 15. How about Robbie Lawler? I mean, sure, sign me up. Like, wouldn't you be interested in that fight?
I definitely would be, you know, and Neil Magny, again, Neil Magny's been doing this for a long time. I think any of those between 13 and 15 sounds great. And honestly, if we start looking at this, how much longer can we really have the Damian Mayas of the world, you know, in good conscience listed, you know, in the top 15? Like, this man is knocking on the door of retirement. He's got to be. And if he's not, you know, then Father Time is going to take care of that for him, right?
Yeah. Well, the thing about the top 15 rankings, and anybody who's listened to me on any podcast, I say it all the time. People always said lightweight's the best weight class. I actually think welterweight is. And when you look at deep, I mean, when you look at the top 15, you think about the guys that are not ranked in the top 15. Gunnar Nelson is not in the top 15. Michael Chiesa, Li Jingliang, Jeff Neal, Mike Perry, Anthony Rocco Martin. These are guys who are not in the top 15.
And Michael Chiesa is right there knocking on the door as well. That would be a hell of a fight for both those fighters. Because remember, Chiesa moved up after being tired of weight cuts.
Yeah, so I mean, how loaded is that weight class when you have that many studs who are not in the top 15? And then they're bringing more guys in. Kevin Lee just came to the weight class. James Vick is moving up. I mean, Curtis Melinder is a guy who's good, you know? So there's just so many good guys. And I'm only talking about the UFC. You betted outside the UFC, there's some killers, you know, Rory McDonald, Douglas, the whole Bellator, the Welterweight Grand Prix was loaded.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why I think Welterweight is the best weight class. So that's why it's taken Muhammad, in my opinion, so long to get in the top 50 rankings, just because it's just, I mean, you've got Murder's Row out there.
Exactly. And for Belal, I mean, he's still young as far as age is concerned. You know, when you see some of the ages of these fighters, he's not up there yet. So his time's going to come. And, you know, what a great performance for him in front of his fans and a very big home favorite in Abu Dhabi. So, sure. You know, again, I'll give a shout out and a congratulations to a Chicago boy from Belal Muhammad. And then we'll kind of look a couple other fights that I want to, you know, get into with you. Obviously, you know, we know that the featherweight between Lerone Murphy that ended in that draw was kind of a battle, and that was an awesome fight. But, you know, if we keep going fight by fight, we're going to be here all night. The JoJo Calderwood-Andrea Lee fight, you know, that ended a decision with Calderwood. I actually scored that the way that the second judge scored it, which was 29-28 for Lee.
Sure.
And I really think that that was a fight that could have gone to a draw. But, you know, you're not going to have back-to-back fights go to a draw, right? I mean, what are the fucking odds? But, you know, with that fight, you know, it looks like Andrea didn't, and I have to pull this up, so don't quote me on this yet. Andrea only dropped one spot. Obviously, JoJo jumped two. So another loaded division that we're starting to see. And this is the division that should have been created before we created the featherweight division for women, right? We can both agree with that.
Yeah, there's just the amount of women that can make 125 compared to 145. I mean, the 145 division, it's so funny when I've heard, when Cyborg went over to Bellator, and people like, you know, one of the arguments before she signed was like, oh, Bellator has a better 145 pound division. I'm like, do they? They have Julia Budd. Like, who else they got? Like, it's just a weak weight class.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, who did the UFC have,
no,
right?
No, I know, but it's like, I'm just saying, it's like, yeah, I guess they have it better. It's like, did you want to eat a pile of crap or drink a cup of piss? Like, I mean, I don't want to do either.
Well, and then we kind of look at what the women's featherweight division in the UFC was, right? It was either women who were okay moving up from the bantamweight division because they didn't want to have that hard of a weight cut, I guess, and they were willing to take the money that they'd get fighting Cyborg, or they just got pulled from Invicta. That was really what the featherweight division was. And, you know, I'm glad right now that I can see that Amanda Nunes is the champion of the division that's probably going to fold. If I'm Dana White, there's no sense. I mean, go on the UFC's website rankings. Jesus, Keith, every other one not only has the champion, but they have the top 15. You have your pound for pound, and then you have the women's featherweight champion Amanda Nunes, and then nobody else listed. What does that tell you about your division?
Yeah. I mean, you go to Sherdog, we pull up our rankings, and it's like, well, there's Felicia Spencer, who Cyborg smashed. Who else is there? No weight classes. Nobody. Deacon Anderson, who's lost two losses.
Jermaine Durandamy, who flat out refused to fight her.
Yeah, she's fighting at 135. So.
Now, Holly Holm, who moved up to 145 to fight for it. Raquel Pennington, who moved up to 145, I believe. Not Raquel Pennington. Oh, shit. Help me out here. From Invicta.
Cassagano.
Yes. And then there was one more from Bellator. Or not Bellator, Invicta.
Megan Anderson?
Nope. I mean, yes, she was one, but I'm trying to... It doesn't matter. Never mind.
Like Leslie Smith, when she went up before...
Nope. No. See, you're going to make me try and pull up Cyborg's freaking record. Doesn't matter. Anyway. But yeah, there's not a division there.
Oh, you're talking about Yana Kuniskaya.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. There you go. There it is. And again, she's also listed as a bantamweight, or as a rather.
Yeah, she's a veteran.
So it's just there was never a featherweight weight class. So just get rid of it. But anyway, with the women's flyweight, again getting on a tangent, Calderwood moves up. She's now ranked third in the division, you know, where you have Jessica Evil Eye and Caitlin Chookagian, who are all kind of right there, you know, one and two, but Valentina Shevchenko just looks like the clear champion. Where do you take Calderwood from here with that win?
Well, she is coming off a loss to Caitlin Chikagian, so I definitely don't think she should get a title fight. So I think she'd be, you know, like the. Honestly, I wouldn't even mind if she just sat on the sidelines and just took on the winner of Shevchenko and Chikagian. If not, maybe Jennifer Maia, who's coming off a big win.
Yeah. You know, and kind of. I think what we end up running into all too often, Keith, is we see these fighters climb. And we think, okay, well, you know, their next in line should be the person that they're just right underneath. But in the midst of doing that, they don't really set clear rankings for the people that are in that mix, right? It's that same problem that we have with the lightweight division, right? We could feasibly say that anyone at any given time could be the number one contender.
Yeah, so that said, Caitlin Chikagian and Jennifer Maia, they're actually booked for, I even forgot about this, they're actually booked against each other.
Yes.
For that November card. So, I don't know, I mean, Liz Carmouche coming off a loss, going down Lauren Murphy, I mean, I really, there's nothing that kind of jumps out for me if you're Joanne Calderwood.
You just kind of sit there, right? I mean, enjoy being right there and take some time off, you know, get healthy, get strong, work on a game, yeah. You know, because at some point you keep winning, you're going to get Valentina Shevchenko. It's going to happen. So, but again, a very good fight for the fans. I think it could have gone either way. I don't have a problem with Calderwood winning by any stretch of the imagination. And I also can see where the judges would have scored it against Andrea KGB Lee. So I think that there's no problem with Lee only dropping one spot there, you know? If mm-hmm. not, she could have stayed exactly where she was. And anyone who jumped her in the process of that, I think she could go back and end up defeating anyway. As we kind of look on, obviously the co-main event we had with Edson Barboza versus Paul Felder, that was another one. Edson Barboza's people at least seem like they want to kind of challenge that because, you know, at least from the eye test, Barboza looked a little bit better in the face than Felder did.
Yeah, I scored it for Barboza. I gave him the first, second round. The 30-27 scorecard is one of the worst scorecards I've seen. I thought Barboza won the first round so convincingly that I considered giving him a 10-8 round.
Yeah.
So that's, I don't know how someone could possibly give the first round, to Paul Felder. I could hear an argument the second. I thought Barboza won, but yeah, that 30-27, that's terrible.
It is, and I again, it's going to be hard to turn over a commission ruling on that, and you're definitely not going to get that switch to a no contest. This is one where, you know, Dana said this years ago, if you don't want to lose the fight, don't let it go to the judges' scorecards, right? So it's one of those things that we just kind of have to eat. Edson Barboza, I don't think he's going to end up going too far away in that division. He dropped two spots. Paul Felder jumped up three. You could easily... I guess you could run that back if you wanted to, but at this point, there's no point in doing it because now you're just wasting time on runs that you could have.
Yeah.
So it's...
I actually wouldn't mind Felder. I mean, I think... Even though I thought he lost, I think, honestly, he's coming off a win. He probably deserves to move up the rankings and get someone. I don't mind that as a bounce back fight for Dustin Poirier.
That's actually a great fight. I like that call out a lot, as a matter of fact. You know, because it was a big win for Paul. It was a learning experience for Dustin Poirier, I guess is the best way to say it, you know. And Dustin's by no means done, you know, but give him a bounce back fight and make it against a challenge. And Paul Felder, obviously, you know, is just a man of steel. He's not going down. So that would be a hell of a fight.
Yeah. Another fight I wouldn't mind, Gregor Gillespie called out Paul Felder, so...
That would be, yeah, that's another one. And see, that's the fun part that you and I end up seeing with a lot of the stories that end up going out is, you know, the MMA stories are basically based on fighters calling out other fighters over Twitter. that is journalism today, ladies and gentlemen. That's what it's become.
Well, the funny thing is, Gregory Gillespie has always been asked by John A. who you want next, and he's like, I rule, I don't call anybody out. And then now he's saying, like, what happens when you're sitting at the 10th rank and no one's fighting you? Or excuse me, he's at 11th and no one's fighting him. Well, sometimes you gotta have to stop ruffles and feathers and call people out. So I think someone finally convinced him.
Right. So, I mean, that was, again, a great fight. I didn't agree with the outcome, I think, much like you. But we just have to move on. It's one of those things that we're not going to agree with 100% of the judges. I mean, there's a reason that Adelaide Bird, I guess, is still judging boxing. So
yeah, and they're not going to overturn it. I mean,
yeah.
It's just not going to happen. They just don't overturn it. Decisions.
Yeah. So, other than that, the only other fight, a lot of people say was the performance of the night, went to Curtis Blades. You know, just an impressive second round knockout. Just looked insane. He controlled the fight from start to finish. You know, as far as heavyweight is concerned, and we know that the heavyweight belt now belongs to Stipe. So you got to wonder again, Curtis is another one in the heavyweight. You're probably just going to have to wait until 2020 and see what fight they offer you. You know, does DC retire? Yeah. Do you go up against Ngannou? Are you the next one going up against Stipe, considering Stipe showed Ngannou, you know, what wrestling was? Who knows, right?
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to get a Ngannou fight, but especially when we think Ngannou's going to fight, probably he might get the next fight against Stipe Miocic. Obviously, Daniel Cormier, if he comes back, I doubt he fights Curtis Blades. I think he probably does a third fight with Stipe or does a third fight with John Jones. I don't think he's going to stay out of retirement to come back from retirement or whatever, not retire, to fight Curtis Blades.
Yeah.
But if I'm Curtis Blades, I'm rooting for Stipe to win because Ngannou's beaten him twice, and I don't know if they give him a shot. They may just skip him. So I think he kind of needs Stipe to be the champion.
I agree with you. I think that's the only way that that's going to end up working in Curtis Blades' favor. But, you know, Curtis can only do what he's allowed to do in the ring. And he just put on an absolute clinic this past Saturday. So
yeah, he looks fantastic.
You know, and again, he's big on the wrestling. He has no problem going to the ground. But he also, you know, he has that jaw and he has that knockout power. So again, he's on a tear, and we'll just kind of see what the end of the year has in store for these guys. And I think a lot of this is really going to depend on if DC does decide that he wants to go run it back against Stipe. That's really what it's going to be about.
Yeah, I got nothing to add. I think you summed it up perfectly.
So we got to wrap a pretty little bow on, UFC 242. And, you know, we're hitting right around the hour mark, Keith. So in the interest of time, we'll kind of hit on some of the bigger fights. And then, of course, you look at UFC Fight Night coming up this weekend. And this is a great card, you know. You have a lot of journeymen in this. You know, you have Luis Smolka fighting. You have newcomer Jordan Griffin fighting, who's still doing well. You have Marcin Tybura. And then that's just on the prelim card. And then you end up having, I mean, Misha Cirkunov fighting. You have Glover Teixeira in the co-main. I mean, this is a hell of a card. So outside of the obvious main event between Cowboy and Justin Gaethje, and I'm just going to kind of lay this one out here for you in the interest of timing, Keith. Outside of that fight, because you know we're going to spend some time on that, which fight's most intriguing to you this Saturday?
Oh, man, that's like bringing a fat kid to a buffet and saying...
Okay, I'm going to give you your top... I'm going to give you your top three.
I'll pick one. I'm like, intriguing? I'm actually going all the way down on the prelims. I'm going way down on the prelims. And I really like the Brad Katona Hunter Asher fight.
Okay.
It's a battle of former Ultimate Fighter Show champion versus Dana White Contenderson alumni. Katona obviously trains with the SBG Ireland team. Had a nice run. Obviously, he won the title on the Ultimate Fighter. Came in the UFC, beat up Matthew Lopez, which I think is a very tough matchup in your first official fight in the UFC. It would be a second after winning the show, but his first fight off the show. And then he kind of hit a big roadblock in Maribag, the Bastardville. I always say his name wrong, I'm sorry. But Hunter Asher this is not a rebound fight. Hunter Asher is a four-time Montana state champion wrestler. He was an NCAA wrestler. He's a classic boxer, what they call wrestle boxers, but he likes to get in the pocket and throw power. I believe he's left-handed. He's got big power in his hands. He's fun to watch. I actually didn't think he had that great of a showing in the Contender Series, but I did the Contender Series previews for Sherdog, and I was more impressed with before the show than I was actually on the show. I think the moment might have got to him a little bit, even though he smoked Chris O'Connor. But then this is interesting. See if there's anything in either guy. Like, I think it's a bounce back fight for Katona or a really coming out party for Asher. And I think that's the matchup that I'm really circling. I know a lot of people really like. I know I said only one, but a lot of people really like the Cole Smith Michael Johns fight. I don't. I have watched Cole Smith. He's undefeated. He's 7-0. I have not been impressed with him. And Miles Jones, I view completely opposite. I view Miles Jones as a future like top 10 guy. I think he's that good. He fights at Fortis MMA, which I think is one of the best teams in the world. Very unsung down there in Texas. So that's why I'm not as high in that fight, because I think Miles Jones puts a stamp on him.
Yeah,
he's dominant one sided match for him. But those are two. I'm going to prelims for two fights that really I'm kind of keeping my eye on.
Well, you know what? I'm actually right there with you on that, because the one that I was looking at, you have to go all the way down a little further to the middleweight fight that you end up having. Oh, I'm sorry, that's on the main card. Excuse me. Where you end up having Uriah Hall fight against Antonio Carlos Jr. Because Uriah Hall, the fight that he ended up losing, Paulo Costa. And I mean, we saw what Paulo is capable of, and that was, you know, when Uriah was coming off of a win against Christoph Jotko. You know, he has a problem there with trying to string together wins, and in that division, I guess you can't fight more than two times a year. So this is one where you end up putting two fighters that are right next to each other as far as rankings are concerned. You kind of, I don't want to say you weed out the loser, but you get to see, hey, maybe the winner of this gets a Jared Cannonier, who everybody's been kind of hyping up, you know, and then you kind of see where Jared Cannonier is, or you end up putting up against an Ian Hirsch. There's a lot that happens with this fight, because win or lose, I don't think you really go down in a matchup, right?
If Uriah Hall beats Antonio Carlos Jr., I think Antonio Carlos Jr. goes way down, because that'd be two fights in a row that he entered as a favorite and lost. But they're definitely guys. Two guys that are, you know, top 15 in the world. I think they're very top 15 in the middle. And if not, they're right on the cusp. Let's see if I still have the rankings up. Carlos Jr. is at 13, Hall's at 12. So, yeah, two guys, 12 and 13 in the rankings. I can see the winner getting like a Derek Brunson or something like that. This is a classic striker versus grappler. I mean, Tony Carlos Jr. is as elite as it comes on the ground, and he's going to want to get his face, going to get to the clinch, get his body locks, get a takedown. He's very good, like smothering top pressure. He made a guy like Eric Spicely, who's known for his ground game, look like an amateur. Like, that's how good his jiu-jitsu is. And you got Uriah Hall, which Uriah Hall is like heavy. 1 minute, at any moment, and this guy can do some crazy thing and knock out a guy like Gegard Mousasi. And then other minutes, he looks terrible. So you kind of really, it's like what's that, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde kind of thing. You never know what you're going to get with him. But in a sense, like, a lot of people use it against him. And part of me, like, that's kind of exciting. Because you're like, you can be like, it's only Uriah Hall. And then he does something crazy and knocks someone out. So that's why I think it's a little intriguing. But I think he made a good choice on a fight to watch. This is a good one.
Absolutely.
Who do you think is going to win?
You know,
I didn't even put you on the spot.
No, that's okay. So I've never disliked the ground game. I really enjoy the ground game. I do think there's a little too much hype. If you're asking me honestly, I think there's a little too much hype. And maybe it's because of wrestlers, and this is jiu-jitsu, so it's not really the same thing. But wrestlers are very big on the ground, right? But we've seen over the past several years, you know, you have to have that complete game. And we saw what Jorge Masvidal did to Ben Askren. You know, we've seen when strikers end up taking out wrestlers. And I'm going to say this. If Uriah Hall can be patient, Uriah Hall is going to win this fight. But if he tries to, you know, be too much of a striker and Junior gets his hands on him, it's going to be over. So I say, give me Uriah Hall, but give me Uriah Hall winning in a later, like, kind of TKO situation. This isn't going to be a head clean off, and it's also not going to be a boring decision.
Well, there you go.
There, did I answer the question?
I'm leaning Antonio Carlos Jr. I can't trust Uriah Hall. Like, you never know what you get, and Carlos Jr. has such an advantage on really anybody on the ground. So I expect him to back your eye all up, get a takedown, and work his magic, and maybe get a submission, or if not, just to get three takedowns and win all three rounds.
Oh shit! Okay, there you go. So yeah, now you're really on the show, because disagreeing with me tends to be great. And by the way, I'm sure Mike Heck will catch you up on this. For some reason, I end up being like the curse of all of the UFC fighters. Bellator, I'm great, but when it ends up coming to UFC, every time I end up picking on this show and I go up against other people, I end up being on the losing side of that. So the worst thing Uriah Hall could have heard was me picking him to win. And as I look, Antonio Carlos Jr. is a -240 favorite. Uriah Hall is a +190. So yes, if you agree with me, it might be a good pick as far as gambling's concerned.
Yeah, and Uriah Hall, I mean, like I understand why the line is that big, but Uriah Hall, I mean, this is a guy who's knocked on Gegard Mousasi. You know what I mean? Like, you can't ever count that guy because of just his... I mean, he's as athletic as it comes. I mean, even his last fight against Bevan Lewis, I thought he was losing the whole time, and then knocked him out. So...
Oh, yeah, you're right. Jesus, he was, now that I think about that fight.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I don't know if I could call him, but are you familiar with Dan Tom? Do you know who he is? You MMA junkie?
I know the name.
Okay, so I did his show 2 days ago. His Protected Neck podcast. We predicted the whole card.
I do know Protected Neck. Okay. Yes.
Okay. So he's the host of that. We predicted the entire card, top to bottom, and I didn't think this was possible, but we picked every single fight exactly the same.
See that? Yeah, that's
like, I didn't think it was even possible.
I think the last time I did that, I had Blake Weather Stevenson on my show.
Okay. Yeah, Blake.
So it's very few and far between, because there are just so many. I mean, we all have our own little things, right? And, you know, part of the reason I'm picking Uriah Hall is I think that there's a little bit too much of an emphasis on, well, you got to be able to wrestle, you got to be able to wrestle. Well, of course you got to be able to wrestle, but at the end of the day, like, you know, that one knockout power, that one shot knockout power exists. You know, so you...
Sure does.
Wrestle as much as you want, but we've also seen, you know, wrestlers who go in for an ill-advised, you know, single leg takedown, catch a knee to the grill, and the fight's over. So, you know,
yeah, you're right. You're 100% exactly what can happen.
So, you know, that's where I'm going with that. And then, of course, you know, where we all want to go, and I'm not looking over the Glover Teixeira fight versus Nikita Krylov. That's an excellent fight, but obviously, Cowboy versus Justin Gaethje is just. This card has a good chance of doing better American numbers, maybe, than UFC 242 did. We know what they did in Russia. They did bonkers numbers.
Sure, yeah.
You know, but considering A, this is on ESPN Plus, B, not a pay-per-view, C, we want to see what happens with Cowboy. The last thing that we want to see is be the person that misses the fight that, you know, could possibly be Cowboy's last, because Jesus, he's fought 48 times, you know. We never know when his last fight's going to be the last one.
And don't forget, D, if you don't watch a Justin Gaethje fight, you're really dumb.
Yeah, because Justin Gaethje is so fast, and, you know, everything he does is, it's almost like he's his own worst enemy, but he's also his best accomplice, right? Because he can either go in there and just bombard you and bum rush you and you don't know what the hell happened. Or he can go in there and bum rush you, and you land a shot, and he's done. And there's nothing in between.
Yeah, I mean, he's entertaining. He's gonna bring a war. He's gonna invite a war. I don't think it's possible for him to be in a boring fight. So, yeah, I will never miss a Justin Gaethje fight.
No, I agree with you.
He's probably the most entertaining guy to watch out there.
He's got 2-fight win streak, and the last fight he lost was a guy who just fought for the belt himself. So you can't hate on that.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, so, Keith, I'm going to throw it to you. You got Justin Gaethje, you know, who is 20-2, so he's not exactly inexperienced, and he's been fighting top-notch competition for a while himself. But then again, you have Cowboy, who's just Cowboy. So, Keith, how do you see this fight going down?
So, I'm gonna make a pretty bold statement. I hate to do this, but I'm going to do it. I like Gaethje. I like him fairly easy. I think Donald Cerrone is tailor-made for Justin Gaethje. What I mean by that is, when I think of Donald Cerrone, and I think about so he likes to stay at space, he likes to stay on the outside, throw those kicks, throw those long punches, everything's long. When he beat up Hernandez there, Alex Hernandez, he just kept it on the edge of his punches, big combinations, this and that. However, when I think about the negatives about Thomas Sarnia, there's two things that always stand out to me. He's never liked to be pressured, and he's a slow starter. And Justin Gaethje is the complete opposite. He's going to come right out the gate. He's going to be coming nonstop. Even if Cerrone's landing his clean shots, he's going to be walking. I just see Gaethje walking through and turning this to a war, having Cerrone fight on his back foot. And if anybody's ever heard me do any podcast, they're probably so sick of me when I see breakdowns. And I always say, getting the guy to fight off his back foot. That's like my catchphrase or something. And the other thing about Dan Strani is he's always been weak to the body. And Gaethje, he likes to throw the kick to the body, but he also likes to do body punches. Something that really helped him in the Michael Johnson fight. If he started taking over the Michael Johnson fight, it wasn't the big punches. It was actually the body shots that set up the big punches later. I just see Gaethje landing that stuff. The only way I see Cerrone, you know, is like Gaethje walking right into a high kick or walking right into a step in knee, something like that. But other than that, I really like Gaethje. I think he's going to take him out too. I think he's going to knock him out like maybe end of the first, but I think probably mid second.
Okay, I'm going to side with you that Gaethje wins this. So
okay,
because I agree with you. I mean, and I hate to say that because I've got to be honest with you, Keith. Okay. I think if Cowboy loses this fight, Cowboy retires.
He might. It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, he's got a son. His father. I mean, he's made enough money. He's got plenty of opportunities. I mean, it's like a celebrity. I can see him always doing something in MMA. So yeah, I can see it.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I'm actually trying to get the odds on this, and for some reason, I'm not seeing them.
I'll get you.
All right, but
give us your prediction. I'll give you
that. Yeah. There you go. So I was gonna end up agreeing that it was gonna be early because you know. As fast as Justin Gaethje works, and I'm sure that he has the gas tank. I
have the odds if you want. I don't need to jerk.
What do we got the odds at?
Okay. Is there a certain site you prefer, or is it not?
I'm always on Bovada, and I can't even find the fight on Bovada.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. So Bovada.
Oh, there it is. I see it. Never mind. I'm an idiot. Yeah, go. So Justin Gaethje's -200, and Cowboy is a +160. So Gaethje is favored to win. Not overwhelming odds, but still impressive enough. I'll put it this way. I picked Uriah Hall to win this, and Uriah Hall has, as far as the betting odds are concerned, less of a chance to win than Cowboy does. So that just puts everything into perspective for people. Okay. But the next question I'm going to pose to you, because I do think that Gaethje gets it done early, because he applies so much pressure, so fast, so quick. So Keith, does Justin Gaethje finish Cowboy Cerrone faster than Tony Ferguson did?
Ferguson stopped him when it was actually what, end of second? He never came out for the third, right?
Yes.
Or he did.
And they stopped it because Cowboy went to blow his nose and then his eye puffed up.
Yeah. So that technically counts as 10 minutes. I do. I think he's going to stop him about midway through the second.
Okay.
He might even get it late first.
Gotcha. All right. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. So, That's where we are as far as UFC Fight Night coming up this weekend. And, you know, again, a card that everybody, it's not exactly free. It's on ESPN+, but let's be honest, it's basically free. So if you miss this, it's really your own damn fault. The only reason I could see myself missing this is at some point I have to flip it over to watch the Tyson Fury gift fight that he has before he goes up against, you know, the real people and, you know, Anthony Joshua, Deontay Wilder. And I know that I'm probably just pissed off a lot of boxing fans, but whatever. So
is there a chance that they would be a crossover, both of them going on at the same time?
Well, let's see. The main card starts at 7. I guess if I look at the fights, 2, 4, 5,
they're looking about 10 o'clock.
15.
11 o'clock in the East Coast.
If you know what, if the lightweight, I'm sorry, if the main event goes the distance, you could feasibly miss the early rounds of the Tyson Fury fight.
Okay.
But that's if this goes the full 25 minutes, which neither you and I are predicting.
No.
So, feasibly you should be able to watch both. I'm erring on the side of caution, right? I always like to be early to the fights rather than late. So,
now, if it comes on, you have only one choice. What are you watching?
Oh, Cowboy Justin Gaethje.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, I mean, I know, and sorry, Eric, because I know that I'm doing the fight card for My MMA News for Tyson Fury, but I'm pretty sure that I'm going to be able to like flip back and rewind and catch myself up really quickly on that fight if I need to. And it's not like I'm going to be able to, you know, switch over. Okay, this was a 10-9 round. Back over to Cowboy. So there it is. But I don't foresee that being a problem. But thank you for at least putting me on the spot on that. Now I have to hold to it.
No worries.
I love it. I love it. So the other thing that I'm going to leave you with, and we're going to kind of just touch on news because we've touched on the Cowboy situation until we're blue in the face. We don't need to do it anymore. A lot has come out. Oh, actually, first things first, this was just posted an hour ago, Lauren Murphy signing an extension deal with the UFC. So a huge shout out to Lauren Murphy, a friend of the show for some time now. Awesome guest to have on. Always just keeps it real. We love when we get to talk to her. So couldn't have happened to a better fighter in my mind.
Yeah, congratulations there.
So, but the other thing that I want to look at is this mess that we have in the welterweight division with Colby Covington. And, you know, Colby kind of went on to say that he was offered the Usman fight, but at not a respectable rate for him. And I don't, and Damon Martin wrote the story, and it was very well written by Damon, where basically Colby said, hey, you know what? Love me or hate me, I bring ratings to you. And I still haven't lost for some time. So I should be getting more than just the basic title challenger fee. So Keith, in the midst of all of this, if we throw aside all of Colby's antics, and I'll call them antics, you know, we know that he's gone on the record and he's rubbed people the wrong way. That's just what he's going to do. Does he deserve to get more than what they offered him?
Well, it's tough. I don't know exactly what the money was they offered him. And it's, without having the numbers, yeah, I think so. I mean, I just think fighters in general are underpaid. I mean, Todd Duffy wanted a big rant. I disagree with a lot of things he said, but generally the ultimate thing of the rant was fighters get underpaid. I mean, I don't know anybody who doesn't believe that. That said, I mean, you can't deny that Colby Covington has a star quality. He likes to play the villain. He plays it so well. He gets, I mean, it's very rare for MMA fans to side with Dana White over a fighter. So that shows you how much of a he can play the villain correctly. But think about some of the things he did. Now, like I said, you can love Colby, you can hate Colby, but you can't deny he's done some of these things. I mean, he's brought the belt to the White House. He got the first family to show up at an event sitting front row. And they weren't even there. They were just making guest appearances. They were like there with the whole card.
Yes.
Sharing and backstage, the president of the United States called him on the phone. I mean, this is stuff that, I don't know how many times has Tom Brady got a call from the president?
Well, yeah.
I'm sure he has. I'm saying, like,
I agree with you.
Like, he's in that level. Like, that's, like, the president is tweeting about you before a fight, wishing you luck. I mean, that's insane. And like I said, I'm not trying to get political. You can think however you want. I'm not saying that. But regardless, he had most people think the most powerful man in the world tweeting about him. Like, there was a time where MMA was banned from television, and now we have a leader of a major power in the world tweeting out. So yeah, I do think they should be paying him a lot. And then you think about his streak, his trash talk, the back and forth with him and Usman on the broadcast. Remember when he crashed Usman's open workout? When they almost came to blows at the casino, like this stuff to build this fight. And the other thing is, they're saying that Kamaru Usman is tough to work with, too. It's not just Colby. Colby's saying, hey, Usman didn't sign anything either. He kept calling him the B side, didn't come to the table. Leon Edwards has accused Usman of being hard to sign in the past. Jorge Masvidal has accused him of being hard to work with. So, and let's not forget, like, look at the tweet. Like, he just tweeted out, and he's like, yeah, give me the right opponent and the right money. Like, how could it be the wrong opponent? Like, isn't Colby the clear? Like, why is it both? That surprised me. The right money and the right opponent.
Yeah, and see, and that bothers me because, again, this is where the ranking system goes to shit, right? Because if we go to UFC's ranking system right now, they still technically have Colby listed number 2 behind Tyron Woodley number 1. Well, Woodley lost pretty definitively to Kamaru Usman. So, yeah. And that was, we tried to have Covington versus Woodley for a while, and that never came to work. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you end up seeing these reports that I think I ended up seeing yesterday, talking about the people who actually do the ranking system, that vote on the ranking system for the UFC, and like four or five of them don't even cover MMA in any capacity.
Yeah, that's insane.
You know, it blows my mind. I mean, if you go on the UFC's website right now, Keith, go on the UFC website right now. They still don't have, because you have event results, right? They still don't have the win icon under Covington versus Lawler.
Oh,
from back in August.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, so yeah. Something's wrong here.
Hasn't the rankings always just been the way the UFC wants the rankings? No one really, like you mentioned about how many people cover, but I mean, you look down the list and I don't recognize anybody's name. The way the rankings should be, they should be, you know, you take 8 to 10 of the top MMA websites, you pick 2 or 3 guys from each website, and those are the guys. I mean, you have, you know, you go to ESPN, you get, you know, Ariel Helwani, Brett Garbamona, whoever. You go to Miami News, they grab you and Eric and Doug, maybe, and they come to Sherdog, and hopefully they pick me and somebody, you know, 2 other guys from my site and different ones. And that's how it should be discussed, by guys who actually cover the sport and know this stuff. But, I mean, we'd be going down a rabbit hole there. we'd probably stay there for a very long time.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I guess at the end of the day, to kind of bring it back to the focus, a lot of people, if you want a reason to hate Colby Covington, you have many reasons. Okay. This fight not coming to fruition, I don't blame him at all. I don't blame him. He hasn't lost in almost 4 years. You know, he's on a 7-fight win streak. He is clearly the number one opponent for whoever holds that damn belt. I don't care if it was Tyron or Kamaru Usman.
Yeah.
You know, and they tried to make those fights. And every time it was under like circumstances that didn't really work out for Colby, and I think that's not fair for him as a fighter. Never mind when you think of him as a person, as a fighter, he has a gas tank for days. He should absolutely be the next contender for that belt.
And to me, besides whether I think most people who listen to this, you're either pro Colby, anti Colby, and Usman, you're gonna view him however the opposite of how you view Colby. If you're Colby pro Colby, you're probably thinking of him as kind of ducking him on here. But if you're anti-Kobe, you think Usman should get what he wants. That said, if you love film study, you love breaking down in styles, I don't know if there's a more fascinating stylistic matchup than Colby Covington and Kamaru Usman. I do enjoy that stuff. I am so excited for that matchup if it gets matched. And I really hope the UFC doesn't blow it and can find a way to get both these guys to the table and agree on something.
I agree with you. And you got to wonder if they're going to do this. It's either going to be at the end of this year or the first month of 2020, or I think they've blown their opportunity. Because you can't have either of these two sitting on the sidelines, especially with one of them holding the damn belt. Yeah, or if you ask Colby, he holds a belt also.
Colby's talking about moving on and just fighting somebody else on the Washington card, just a regular fight night, because he wants to get the present there.
Yeah, exactly.
If Colby Covington gets put on the Washington card, and they announce the presence of the film, to me, that card has to instantly turn to a pay-per-view. You got to change it. There's no way you can have a president of the United States at an event, which I don't think would happen. But if you actually got the president to be there, I don't know. That'd be crazy.
Wasn't Trump at a WWF pay-per-view at one point?
I don't know. I don't follow him. he's been at MMA fights before he was president. I mean, he was part of the whole Affliction deal and all that way back then. But I mean, like, since he's the president, I don't know. I don't know if he went to WWF. I have no idea. Yeah. I know he was involved with the Vince McMahon and the fighting, but I don't know if that was when. I'm pretty sure that wasn't when he was the president.
Right, but
I could be 100% wrong. I don't follow WWE. But WWE, that's how it shows you how bad I am. Hasn't been WWE for 20 years.
Exactly. So that's one of the things. But again, we both agree that that's the fight to make. Please, UFC, don't blow it. You know, let's make this right. Let's make it happen. And then you get to, hey, if you want to shut Colby up, this is the way to shut him up. And if he wins, you're just going to have to fucking eat it. Sorry, you are. Because he's right there. But at that rate, sir, you and I have, I think this has been one of the longer discussions that I've had in some time. Normally, because you and I have gone down a rabbit hole, and this is the first time you and I actually doing the show. So, you know,
every
the next time...
Every, every time I'm ever on a show, I think that's the response. In fact, I'm doing the breakdown show for The Loudmouth in May. I'm one of the exec producers of The Loudmouth. We do. And I'm filling in for Max Freeman. And this past episode, they announced that. And the co-host announced, like, so this next show is 1 hour. That one is definitely going to be 2 hours because I like to talk a lot.
Exactly. Hey, you know what?
I
love it.
I'm sorry.
There's nothing to apologize for. There's, you know what? In the grand scheme of things, Keith, every time that we talk, we have more people who kind of want to listen. And you can't always get to every... There's a reason that, you know, certain people have, you know, daily shows that go on for a couple hours apiece. There's, you can't cover it all. And every time you try to, you know, like we did tonight, you'll find yourself going down a rabbit hole. We start
and
here...
And we didn't cover everything. That's the crazy thing.
No, we didn't. You know, in the interest of timing, we didn't. I could easily sit here and talk about that Tyson Fury card and, you know, what it means for the future of the heavyweight boxing sport moving forward with, you know, Anthony Joshua, Anthony Ruiz Jr., all of that, but we're not going to. So this, ladies and gentlemen, is where we leave you. But before we get off, of course, Keith, we always like to let everybody know where we can find your work. You know, obviously you're on Between the Links with Mike Heck, so that's going to be where I'm going to tell everybody to start, you know, to hear everybody. But where else can we find your work, my man?
Yeah, thanks. First of all, if you need to follow me on social media and on Facebook, you can just friend request me. I pretty much accept anybody. And unless you look like you're like a scam, I'm not gonna accept you. But if we have mutual friends, then I'm gonna accept you. On Twitter, it's at Keith Schillan MMA. So it's my last name is spelled S H I L L A N. So it's K E I T H S H I L L A N M M A on Twitter. And you can find my writings at SureDog at Cage Side Press. And then I'm a frequently involved with the Loudmouth MMA podcast. We have a whole podcast network, so there's multiple shows. I am on three of them constantly. I'm on the Sunday Morning Corner Man, which is a recap I do with John Franklin. I am on the Between the Links, which is the show that Mike Heck, it's a debate show. Mike Heck hosts it. Myself, Davison Baker, and Craig Allen are three permanent guests, and every week we have a special guest, which I'm sure we'll get Ryan on soon enough. And then I also do a show called MMA Yesterday with Kyle Steele, which we look back at old UFCs and we just break it all down, kind of like a little history recap and thing. So those are three shows I do, but we have more shows coming to that network.
There you go. And actually, I love listening to Kyle Steele, so it's definitely going to be something that you'll be checking me out. So go check all those out. Of course, everybody knows Mike Heck from this podcast. And Keith, we've had a wonderful time with you. You will be back on here sooner than you probably know, sir. So we'll be breaking down a little bit more. Maybe you'll be having to add a fourth podcast to that here pretty soon.
There you go. Thank you so much, man. It was the honor to speak with you. I'm a fan of you and your work. I'm a fan of Eric. I consider him a good friend over there at Miami News. And I think that's a really great site. Really great. There's so many friends I have in that fight that I think you do a fantastic job, and you're one of them, man.
Thank you very much, Keith. But that's where we're going to leave everybody. Enjoy the UFC fight night this weekend. You know, let us know if you think that you're wrong. You can hit him up on social media, find him on Facebook, find me on Facebook, Twitter, you know, and kind of let us know. That's the best that we have from everybody is you know, hitting that like, subscribe button to our shows and telling us, hey, I think you're crazy for picking against Cowboy. Or, hey, I think that, you know, you're onto something by picking Grace, or by picking Gaethje. That's really where we kind of get our best influence. So we're going to kind of say goodbye. Enjoy the fights. We'll talk to you all next week. But on behalf of Keith Sheehan, I'm Ryan Sprague saying goodnight, everybody. We'll see you next week.